Yesterday, we started talking about neural networks for supervised learning. And we specifically talked about kind of what they look like and some of the different parameters in their structure. Today is going to be all about how to actually train those networks and what it means for them to learn something. So let me just quickly revisit a couple questions that came up, because I kind of thought about these questions a little bit more and also tried to look into it a little bit. So one question was, when we were introducing this activation function, I kind of said it has a dependence on the layer L of the network, but there was a good question about whether it can depend on the neurons. And so I don't think I'm going to say much more than I did yesterday, but I just thought I would share that I did read a little bit, and people say you can have it different for every neuron, although it's just more common to do it the same for every layer. And as with a lot of things in neural networks, because they're pretty complicated to understand exactly how to optimize them and how to choose these hyperparameters, because they are difficult to study analytically. I mean, you can look at this, and I'm sure you can find some arguments people will say, but I'm kind of hesitant to say them now, because sometimes people are kind of trying to come up with a way, but I don't know that anyone really knows for sure always the best choice. I would say one thing to be aware of is that these activation functions have very different ranges of outputs depending on the choice. So within one layer, you have very different possibilities for what range it can output. It just could change your results and cause it to kind of almost favor one neuron over others. It doesn't mean you shouldn't do that, but it's just like something to be aware of that can happen. So again, it's not really a definitive answer, but just a thought. Then one other thing that came up, which we talked about this activation, and somebody asked, why don't we put an alpha here so that the gradients match right at the origin here? And I realized actually, I think we actually don't, I mean, you can do that for sure, but that would actually just be equivalent to having no alpha in front here, because if we wanted to just multiply an activation function by an overall factor, that would be equivalent to just learning a weight and a bias that's multiplied by an overall factor as well. And that's something we can already do in our network. So actually introducing a difference here is just, you know, giving us a little bit more freedom in what that activation can do. And I agree, you know, sometimes you might want to have it just equal to one so that you do have that increased smoothness at the origin. And actually some references that you look up won't even have this alpha parameter, but it is kind of the more general way of writing it. So I had said yesterday, you know, you could have an alpha and a beta to be even more general, but I take that back, because I think actually having it like this is just as many hyperparameter degrees of freedom, because that overall scale factor can be within the weights and biases. So I just wanted to revisit that quickly. Okay, so, oh yeah, yeah.
I have one more question. Yeah. Appear in the future or something, but in this architecture I am missing where the labels appear.
Okay, so we haven't
now, or
they are going to appear now for the first time, because so far I haven't talked at all about training, right? I've just talked about, if I give you a neural network, I put in some input, what's the output? Now what we would really like is for that output to kind of compare in a certain way with my labels, but I didn't use the word labels yet, because we haven't at all really talked about how to train according to our data set. So it's going to be like in the next sentence that I'll be writing labels. Yes, great question. Okay, any other questions before we kind of get started on some of these kind of core ideas of training? Okay, perfect. So let's talk about cost functions. Thank you. So here is where that word there. So the goal of what we're trying to do with supervised learning is trying to fit somehow to our data set. So what that really means is that ideally, we want to have something so that if I input X and I know what label I'm supposed to get, then the output I get, which is AL, where L is the last layer, capital L, that output should be close to Y. And we're going to, as time goes on, talk about what we mean by close. And you know, we have to be careful of overfitting. But we do want to have a measure of how well I'm approximating this output to my label, right? We use something called a cost function that allows us to measure how well we're approximating our labels for our data set. And just as we discussed, there can be different distance measures. There can also be different cost functions similarly. So this is not an exhaustive list, but I'm just going to tell you two common cost functions, both of which we'll experiment with in the tutorial today. So the first one, mean squared error, this is basically what we've been using in every algorithm so far when we wanted to measure some kind of a distance. So again, this is something similar to something we've seen before. But we could basically look at the output for every component, look at the difference from the label component, square those, and average over the whole data set and over all the components. But another one you'll see a lot. Okay. There's another cost function that it turns out it's common to use, specifically when you're considering components of labels that are all between 0 and 1. And this is another one. And again, the choice can depend on your data set, on the structure of your network, on other choices. And in the tutorial today, we're kind of going to play around with different choices of cost function. Yeah.
Maybe we'll get to this in the tutorial, but are these conditions on Y and A sort of without loss of generality? Like, we can just always normalize the data, and so we can always...
Right. So, we can all, the A's especially, we often put this softmax function that we talked about last time, and that's going to ensure that this is always satisfied. Also in tutorial, we're going to talk about, this is specifically for a classification problem, but this cost function is more often used in classification. You'll see it in tutorial, but there's a way we can encode data when it's classification so that this is always satisfied too. Any other questions? So this is kind of how a number that could measure how well that we're doing. But now we have to think, what do we actually do once we have this measure? How do we actually use that to make some adjustments? And for that is where we need to, again, talk about learning algorithms. We've already talked about one, which was gradient descent. We talked about that for linear regression. And I should emphasize, these learning algorithms are not only for neural networks. So I could have had this discussion earlier in the class, I kind of structured it just based on what we needed for the tutorial last time. So that's why I kind of moved some discussion a little bit earlier. And I just normally have talked about structure and then training, which is why this kind of, for me, usually comes here. But I just moved a little piece of it sooner. So just note that. So what we'd really like to do is optimize this cost function with respect to all of the adjustable parameters in our network, which for a neural network is the weights and biases. So we should have that when we differentiate our cost function with respect to any weight or any bias, we get 0. That would be if we really are finding a minimum. So you might remember for linear regression, we were trying to solve this equation, and it turned out we could do that exactly for the type of function we were trying to fit to. But for a neural network, it's it's usually impossible to do that. We're usually not able to solve this exactly, so we have to use methods like gradient descent. So, what we're trying to optimize is over weights and biases, but just let me remind you that in general, we could be talking about a function where we have some other set of parameters that's something different than weights and biases. So let me just remind you of the notation a little bit more generally. So more generally, I could just consider my cost function might depend on some parameters, P1 to Pn. In our case, they're weights and biases. Later on in the lecture, we're going to kind of get back to being more specific to weights and biases when we talk about back propagation. But as I talk about some of these different algorithms, I'll keep it a bit more general. So in this case, I could just, instead of having separate equations for weights and biases, it's all about differentiating with respect to each parameter. And again, I can't really draw this as a function of many parameters, but let's imagine that I could see a slice of this cost function, which is not an easy thing. I'm just kind of saying hypothetically, this is what it could look like. Visualizing this is not easy always. You know, I could have something really complicated with a lot of local minima. Ideally, I would like to find the global minima for all parameters. But you could see this could be a very challenging problem. Even just in the case of one parameter, it could be challenging. Any questions so far about kind of the goal? No. I know this is a bit of review, but yeah.
When people talk about reward function, it's the same thing as cost function, just opposite. You maximize minimum, the purpose is the same.
Yeah, I guess that often it might be formulated in a way that you're trying to maximize a reward. I don't know if you have a specific context in mind. I'm more used to hearing about a reward in reinforcement learning, but maybe there's some cases in super, like I'm sure there you could formulate supervised learning in terms of a reward too.
I just heard words and I'm just.
Yeah. I think, I'm sure that you can think of it that way too. Like you could get a reward if your labels are close to your output, right? So you could think of it that way too. Yeah. Great. So let me just remind you of gradient descent that we already talked about. So we talked about something called a loss. For neural networks, we're going to call it a cost, although you'll actually see both of those terms. I'm calling it a cost now just because in my code, I often called it a cost. But we're trying to minimize this cost. So we'll kind of take a step with some size eta according to my derivative of my cost function. And remember, eta is the learning rate, kind of the step size. And so in most cases, people will use something similar to this, but usually a bit of an improvement on this. So let me talk to you a little bit about how we can improve a little bit. Although, I mean, you can often experiment with different algorithms in different ways, but usually we're going to want to do some kind of alternative to gradient descent because it'll work a bit better. So the first one is stochastic gradient descent, or SGD. So for this case, this is generally a fine assumption, but for this to work, we have to assume a certain form of the cost function. So we kind of want to assume that our overall cost function is some average of the cost for each data point in my network. And for every example I've shown you so far, this is OK. But I just want to emphasize this is something that's required for this algorithm. So we could imagine that in many cases, we might be able to have a good approximation of this cost function if I only look at some random subset of my data to average over. This is what we'll often do. Again, the size of these mini batches is just another hyperparameter. So if this, you can vary this, this can be anywhere from 1 all the way up to the whole size of your data set. And there can be trade-offs depending on what you're looking at. Let me just tell you a few of the benefits. Does anyone off the top of your head have an idea of what might be a benefit of doing this instead of regular gradient descent? Yeah?
Would you be less likely to get stuck in a local minimum?
Yeah, I think that's, I mean, this is just to me, that's actually like the more subtle one. And is there anything else that you maybe think of right away? Or sorry, I thought of that after I thought of another benefit.
Computational cost.
Yeah, exactly. It could be faster. So we don't have to sum over as many data points, so this could be faster. But then another really good point is that a problem we can get into is that we can get stuck into local minima a lot with these kind of algorithms. And if we're looking at some random subset of data, we're introducing a little bit of randomness that could, in principle, help us get unstuck from a local minima. Any questions about that? Yeah.
Do you have an example of a cost function that can't be written like this?
Yeah, just as I was writing that, I was thinking to myself, I should try to find an example of one. I don't know of one that people often use. I mean, I'm not saying there isn't one. It's those ones are the ones you see most of the time. I guess the thing with machine learning is that people are always experimenting with different ways of doing things. So I think a lot of times when you would even read about this, people wouldn't even bother writing this as an assumption. But I just really like to be clear that like we are assuming this form. I could imagine people could play around with maybe even you could come up with a new form where you could still modify these algorithms to still do something like this, but maybe you could weight different points in a different way or something. I mean, this is just an idea off the top of my head that maybe people have experimented with. But yeah, I just tried to say, maybe somebody someday wants to experiment with a different form of cost function, and what I'm writing here is assuming. But yeah, that's a great question. You could try to see if there's any examples like that.
So in this case, how we choose a mini batch, we do the approximation, mm-hmm. and choose another mini batch?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, you definitely don't want to use the same one every time, because then you're basically doing the original way, but with a smaller data set. So yeah, you definitely want to switch up the mini batch that you're using for every step, because you'll do many steps of this procedure, right? So nice. Okay.
So how are we updating that mini batch? How to go to the next mini batch? This is a learning algorithm. I mean, somehow we need to be able to update our, like in the gradient uh-huh. descent case, we knew exactly how we are going to update our parameter. In this case.
Yeah, so I haven't actually showed you yet how to calculate this, how to estimate this gradient specifically for a neural network. We are going to talk about that. But whenever we do that, there is some sense of averaging over a data set. Like basically there's some sense of doing this sum. And I'm just saying, basically, on each step, instead of summing over the data set, we're going to sum over the mini batch. And we'll, every time we take a step, we can consider a different mini batch.
But the update will be like that?
For this algorithm, the update would still be like that. It's just what's used. Yeah, so maybe here you don't actually see a difference, because I didn't actually write down anywhere I didn't write down anywhere how we estimated this, but in the basic formulation, we would estimate this cost function from the whole data set. Yeah. Okay, so let's talk about something else we can do. The idea here is that rather than just looking at the gradient that we have right now, we could also incorporate some kind of a memory of gradients from previous steps. So in this case, the update step would be different. The idea is that rather than only looking at the gradients, we also kind of include some memory of which is going to end up being previous gradients. And then when I update my parameters, I include both this memory and the new gradient. And then we introduce a new hyperparameter that kind of controls the balance between those two things. And a big benefit here is, again, it can help us when we might be getting stuck. So again, the idea here is that we could get into situations where we find a minimum, and so the gradient is very small. But actually, we want to keep exploring to see if we can find something better. And so in this case, we will have more of a tendency to keep going just based on the previous gradients that we had.
People ever combine both things?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. So I should also emphasize that it's not as I kind of on purpose didn't want to write this as like one, two. These are just like various improvements that you can add on. So it doesn't have to mean one or the other. Yeah, it's a great question. Okay. So one more thing I want to talk about, and I'm going to talk about this a bit generally because there's various ways to do it. So we can do some kind of an adaptation to our learning rate. It doesn't have to just be constant. So again, let me just acknowledge I'm being a little vague here. I'm not saying specifically how we do it because there's lots of different ways. But the learning rate could change depending on the landscape. So there could be some cases where you want to take a bigger step, other times where you want to take a smaller step. And also the learning rate could be different for each of the weights and biases. You could imagine that there could be some parameters where I want to take bigger steps, others I want to take smaller. So it doesn't always make sense to choose the same learning rate for all parameters. So some specific examples that you can look into. There's this atom optimizer, which is a pretty popular one, and there's this root mean square propagation. So I would encourage you to kind of read a little bit more about those and kind of how they adapt the learning rate in ways. So I'm just telling you a few ideas, but there's many other algorithms, and this is an active area of research trying to figure out the best ways to learn. But if you want to look at some that already exist, one place you could look is the documentation for PyTorch, which is the Python package we're going to be using starting today. And there, where you would want to look is this torch.optim. It's going to kind of list for you a bunch of different optimizers that are implemented within that package. OK, so now I want to start talking about backpropagation. So the discussion of learning algorithms was quite general, and we weren't kind of assuming that we have weights and biases or a neural network structure. But now we're going to talk about something that's more specific to neural networks. So we've seen that any of these learning algorithms we've talked about are going to require us to update our parameters by incorporating some knowledge of the gradient of my cost function. For a neural network, that's going to be the gradient of C with respect to the weights and the biases. But we have to talk about how we calculate that. So calculating this cost function is pretty straightforward for the last layer of my network, because my cost, that as we have seen, it's directly written as a comparison of my output from my last layer with my labels. So my function C is some kind of a function of my network output, but it's not quite as straightforward for the other network parameters. So the idea So the idea is that we start by computing the gradients for parameters near the output layer, and then we kind of move backwards. And we're going to kind of see how that works specifically. We're going to derive how that works. But this is kind of different from how information passes through the network. Information passes forward from left to right. We start with some input, and each layer gets the input information from the previous layer. Calculating the gradients kind of goes the opposite way. Questions? So let me again. Assume this form for a cost function. It's some kind of an average. I'm just trying to be really specific of where this form is needed. So specifically, the formulas I'm going to derive are going to be how to compute these gradients for one sample, x. And then there's just going to be some averaging at the end, again, over either the whole data set or over just a mini batch, in order to get the gradients for the overall gradient that might not be just for one sample. And let me just remind you of some notation from last time. So this is kind of how I define the output from every layer. And one more piece of new notation. We'll see that it's going to be useful to define this delta parameter. And then we're going to see how to relate this to the gradients that we need. So as I said, let's start at the last layer. So let me remind you. That C is going to be a function of the output from my last layer. Now, I'm not going to go through the whole derivation. I'm going to derive this first one for you because this one is kind of the most straightforward. But the rest of it, you'll actually do as part of your homework. So I'm just going to kind of show you the solution. And then, you know, you're going to show that this is what you get on that assignment. So I still haven't shown you the gradient for the last layer. I'm going to. I'm just going to start by deriving these delta parameters. So for the last layer, this is what we get. So let me just be clear. This is not going to be obvious. Well, maybe for some of you, you can derive it in your head. But for most of us, I think we would need to do a few lines to show this next one. And that's what you'll do on the homework. Okay, so I just decided to write this down for completeness here, but equations 2, 3, and 4 are something you're gonna derive for yourself for homework 1. Let me just acknowledge, I think I'm going a little faster than I usually like to. It's just because I really want to cover this last thing for the tutorial today. I think it'll be really helpful to see it first. So let me, but I'm happy to take questions while I'm erasing the board. Or yeah, go. Yeah.
Questions. One is the T genetic transpose on W,
mm-hmm.
equation two.
Yeah, it's a transpose, yeah.
Okay. And then for equation three, is it AI?
Oh, shoot, yeah, thank you.
Thanks so much.
I think I might have even written that wrong in my notes. Yeah, I did, but I'm pretty sure it's an I. I'll double check that and I'll update the lecture notes that I post. But yeah, I'm pretty sure that's an I. Thank you. Any other questions? Thanks for pointing that out. Okay, so now what I want to do is kind of put together everything we've seen from yesterday and today to show you kind of what it looks like in pseudocode to train a network. Okay. So one epoch of training means that I'm going to process my data one time. And I'm going to write this just for gradient descent. And then we can think about how we would modify it for other learning algorithms. But let me just write it in this straightforward way. So first, I'm going to think about the output that I get from my network. So in this case, I pass information forward. So I start with my input, which I can consider layer 0. And then I can get the output from the next layer by taking information from the previous layer. And then I'm going to try to fit this all on here. I think it's easier to read that way. And then I'm going to calculate the gradients, I'm going to go in the reverse direction. So I'll start by getting this delta parameter from equation one for the very last layer. And then okay, then I'm going to kind of do this step to calculate my gradients. I'm going to use these equations I showed you to kind of use the information from the layer that's to the right to get information from that layer. And then here, so now I've calculated the information I need, but I haven't updated my parameters yet. So let me just introduce, kind of label this a little bit better. I'm going to call this a forward pass to calculate my output. And then this part here, this is back propagation. And then we just quickly have to do the update. So this is the end of this loop, and now I'm going to start a whole new loop. So for every possible layer, and then I and J index. Now I've calculated these gradients for individual data points. This is my lowercase c, but now I can average over the data set to get it for, or maybe I'm going to average over a mini batch, but again, I'm writing this for simple gradient descent. So I'm averaging in some way over my data set to get this for capital C. And then now I'm at the point where I can finally update. Now, this is gradient descent. So, and of course, we can improve on gradient descent in various ways, but this is kind of the simplest thing we can do. So I encourage you to think a little bit about what it would look like to use an alternative here. And so, yeah, sorry again for going a little fast. I really think it's useful to see this pseudocode, because in the tutorial, we're going to have some code. And I hope it will be useful to kind of compare this with the code, because some of these updates are kind of hidden within functions that we call from PyTorch. So I think it's really great to see this really concretely, and hopefully can kind of compare one. And I'm going to have these notes posted, so if you didn't write it down, you can just look there too. Okay, and any questions? Yeah.
After doing this code, one runs it again with the new values for us.
Exactly. So we would update this based on the previous value, right? And then this is what we store. Depends on how, yeah, you cut this. That's kind of another parameter to choose, which is how many epochs you want to train for. So I just showed for one epoch. Of course, there's like another loop that's loop over epochs.
Okay.
Yeah. Anything else? Okay. See you guys this afternoon.